I love it. Play it. All day. All day we're playing the Bee Gees because our boy Jonas Siegel is back in studio from The Athletic. And he still can't get a haircut in Toronto, so it just keeps flowing. Man. Yeah. It looks better than ever before. How you feeling?
What's the guy's name again?
Barry Gibb.
Barry Gibb. You and he's your brother, right?
Andy. And is it Andy and Barry? And
there's three of them. I don't know. But it's like the third. The Gibb brothers or whatever.
Right. But it's like the third one is like the other tenor. Remember, like Pavarotti? Like,
the one whose name you don't know?
Yeah, you don't know. Like, I should, but Andy Gibb, Barry Gibb, and then the other guy.
Yeah, Rick Gibb or Frank Gibb or something. Jonas Gibb.
That's what it is. Jonas Gibb. I love it. Yeah.
Great, man. This is awesome. Good to have you in here. This is a perfect week for it, right? Like, what a week we're about to have. The Leafs and Habs, there he is up on TSN 4. He is a very stunning man. That Barry Gibb back in the day. He had flow. He had pretty good beard game going on there. And, it's a good look, Jonas. I like it, man.
What can you do?
Nothing, buddy. Just live it. Own it. Right, Noodles? That's how I play it out.
Well, hold on a second here. There's a Robin Gibb, an Andy Gibb, and a Maurice Gibb. So maybe there was four, but one of them never made it. Did one get cut from the band?
I hope not. It's like the Manning brother that never made it.
Is that Cooper Manning?
Cooper Manning. And
apparently, there's another Manning brother?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Cooper Manning. And he was great. Now, he had some sort of injury that derailed his career. Like, he couldn't keep playing. I can't remember exactly what it was. But he went to college. I think he was a wide receiver, though. He didn't play quarterback. But, like, he was like a stud, too.
Really?
Like a stud athlete, stud football player. And he had some injury that derailed his career where he could not continue. And he's the oldest. And so he was, like, at the forefront of it all. And then it was Peyton and Eli. But, yeah, maybe that's what happened with the Gibbs. I don't know the whole story. I just know the Bee Gees are a quality band. And
it's quality stuff. Are they someone you listen to a lot?
No, I wouldn't say a lot, but it's one of those bands where you hear a song by them every once in a while, and you're like, that's a good track.
Yeah,
like, that's a pretty good track. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nobody on this show, even I'm coming 50, and I didn't listen to the Bee Gees because that's the next generation. That's my parents' generation. Like that, you know, I think Barry Gibb, isn't he like 80 years old or something like that?
Oh, yeah, he'd be up there for sure. They would have been early to mid-70s, I think, when they came out.
Yeah, sorry, 74 years old. So, yeah, that's my mom is 75. Like, that's the wheelhouse. So it's not like, you know, we're listening to them. You're aware of their music.
Right.
That's
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. They got some great tracks. We'll play them throughout the afternoon, and I guarantee you're going to hear some, and you're going to say, I didn't even know that was the Bee Gees. But I like that tune. Like, it's a good track. And they're scattered all over soundtracks, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you've been watching movies for 30 years, the Bee Gees are always being played. So,
especially that, the track that we played coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Just the sound of that. Like, that's somebody walking in that's confident.
Isn't that Saturday Night Fever?
Yeah. Staying Alive was big. That was the go-to track for Saturday Night Fever. Like Travolta, every Travolta movie ever had the Bee Gees, basically.
Exactly. Like, that is somebody leaving the building after a big overtime goal last night. That's Braden Point leaving the building.
There it is. How could you not feel good about yourself?
Exactly.
Yeah, like, you walk off the ice, the court, field of play, the golf course, anywhere. And you're feeling it, man.
So, I know it's Positive Monday, but I just, seeing Kyle Lowry walk off the court, that wasn't the song I saw him walk off.
Right? Like, Nick Nurse will join us in an hour. They played six players yesterday. Six guys played, and it was an irrelevant game, and it's a lot of young guys who want to play. Like, Malachi Flynn, I think, played 45 minutes last night.
He looked good.
He's ecstatic. Yeah, let me play. Yeah. By all means, go for it. But what a weird, strange, somewhat emotional, but also disconnected ending to the runway of Kyle Lowry here. If it is the ending. Like, there's more and more, as we go on here, I start to think there could be a plan to bring him back, and maybe he's aware of it, and maybe that's why he didn't feel any nostalgia. But at the same time, you're playing in Tampa in front of people that don't know you, don't care about you. Right. Like, we heard Van Vliet come out and say it. We heard Boucher come out and say it. Marcus Semien said it down the road in Dunedin representing the Jays. They're basically like, Tampa just doesn't feel right. You know, it's not nothing against Tampa. It's nothing against the accommodations. I think we as the city of Toronto owe Tampa a lot. They took our teams in because we decided we couldn't do it. So I think we owe a debt of gratitude to the city of Tampa and the city of Dunedin, which is basically the greater Tampa area, soon to be Buffalo when the Jays move north. Right. But Semien said it, Van Vliet said it, Boucher said it. They're like, just didn't feel right. It's not Toronto. It's not home. So maybe that was a part of it as well, even if there isn't some bigger plan in place to bring Lowry back, although I do think that that's a distinct possibility. He may have said, I don't need the nostalgia because I'm not playing at Scotiabank Arena. Like, this isn't a walk-off.
Right.
The fans that are in the building don't even know who I am and won't even acknowledge the fact that I'm walking off potentially for the last time.
It'll be better when he comes back. Like, let's say he plays somewhere else next year. It'll be better when he comes back. Like, Brian and Noodles, you might remember when Sundin came back that first time with Vancouver.
Yeah.
It was like you guys have been to a lot of games there. It doesn't really get very emotional or, like, the atmosphere isn't great. But the atmosphere when Sundin came back was, like, real. It was, like, I think Stajan was taking the face off, and he stepped back, and the crowd kept going and going and going.
Yeah.
It'll be the same thing for Lowry.
Which is weird because I don't think Vancouver has any – like, he did nothing there, right? Like,
no, nothing.
Mats did nothing there.
It was not a good marriage at all. Like, they overpaid him, and he wasn't in shape, and –
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It wasn't a good spot. His heart wasn't in it, ultimately. Right. He never wanted to leave Toronto. I mean, he made that abundantly clear. Never wanted to leave.
But, yeah, I get it, Jonas. Like, you talk about the emotion, but it was just weird seeing that. Like, I know the dress code. Like, he's wearing a hoodie and a pair of jeans. And it's just like, you know, hey, peace out type of thing.
Get me out of here.
I guarantee guys had, like, private birds waiting for them. Like, they're gone. Like,
oh, absolutely. They're out, absolutely. Or they're staying in Florida. They're just going down to Miami or something
That's true. Yeah.
And, yeah, listen, Lowry, he's a big golfer. He's probably been teeing up every day. He knows that he's due for a new contract. I think a part of his – if I'm playing Kyle Lowry here or if I'm in his camp, they're probably thinking, do I risk an injury here before we're trying to get a new contract? No. Do I feel like I'm actually playing this out in front of people that are going to appreciate it? No. Am I even playing with the teammates that matter to me? With all due respect to a guy like Malachi Flynn – or Bembry, or whoever else was in the lineup, Siakam wasn't playing, Anunoby wasn't playing, Van Vliet wasn't playing. Like, those are his guys. You know, like, these younger kids who have come into the fold and kind of wrapped up the season and played it out, those are not guys that Kyle Lowry has a connection to.
Right.
You know, because he didn't, when he was at his height, when the team was at its height a couple of years ago, none of them were around. So I can understand from his standpoint if he's like, I don't need it. I don't want to. I want to protect the asset that is myself in terms of going into a new year. And again, there may be a bigger picture play at hand here where Lowry is actually considering coming back. And maybe the Raptors have made it clear to him that they would like to explore that possibility. So it may not actually be the final chapter anyway, you know, what we just saw. But if it is, to your point, Jonas, you're absolutely right. If he moves on and signs in Philly or Miami or L.A. or whatever – and comes back next year, and we presume there's 18,000 people in the house, that's going to be as electric as it gets. That'll be bigger than when Kawhi came back, bigger than when DeMar came back, although DeMar's return was pretty emotional. I remember that. Mm-hmm. Way bigger than when Bosch came back or Vince came back. Although Vince was, like, vitriol. T-Mac was vitriol, like hatred when he came back. But you're right. Lowry, in a return in a different uniform, will be incredibly emotional. But, you know, we established this late last week. We were talking about all the different pillars at play here, and there's five of them for the Raptors going into the offseason. One of them clearly is Kyle Lowry, his future. What do you do with it? Masai Ujiri, his future. What do you do with it?
Right.
And then it's the draft lottery, the draft, and free agency. You know, there's five big, big items here at play, and some of them are overlapping. Many of them overlapping, but I thought about it more over the weekend.
Right.
There's been so much focus on Masai and Lowry for obvious reasons and for appropriate reasons because of who they are and what they represent. But if we're ranking those five items that I just listed in terms of impact on the team moving forward, the draft lottery should be number one, or can be number one if they win it. Like, if you win it and they got a chance to win it, you know, they've got a decent percentage. There's lottery balls in play, but it wouldn't be the first time, wouldn't be the last time a team that far down the list in terms of finishing seventh last moved all the way up to first. When they picked Bargnani, they moved up a bunch to go get him. If you can win the lottery and you bring in Cade Cunningham, with all due respect to Kyle Lowry,
right?
Cade Cunningham is going to do a lot more for your team moving forward. With all due respect to Masai Ujiri, if Cade Cunningham turns into the superstar MVP caliber player you think he can be, that's more impactful than Masai Ujiri. So I thought of it over the weekend. I'm like, I think that needs to be hammered home a little bit more. Like, I understand the compelling nature of the Lowry story, the Masai story, and I'm all in on that. And those are right in our face, and we know those guys. The lottery is a lottery. We don't even know what it's going to lead to. But if they win it, everything else is fighting for second, in my opinion, in terms of this offseason, because it immediately changes your whole organization, and in a very positive way.
But let me ask you this then. Should they have tanked earlier? Like, there was a time where they went on a bit of a run. They're at 7%. You could have gotten to, I think, 14, correct?
Yeah.
Is that the best odds?
There was only so far they were really going to be able to go. But, yes, retrospectively, absolutely. No, if you're going to lose anyway, lose every single game.
But that's not fair. Like, they were at a point when they beat Milwaukee a couple times. I think they beat Philly.
Yep.
We were still thinking, like, this is a team that could make noise in the playoffs. Like, it wasn't crazy to think that if they played whoever in the first round that they could upset someone, right? Like, and Kyle was still playing. Like, I don't know if you can really blame them for that. And the NBA has this weird issue with tanking again, even with the play-in tournament. Like, it's not – tanking hasn't gone away. It's not a great –
Oh, it's still there, man.
I love the play-in tournament, the idea of it, but tanking is rampant.
It's as in your face as it possibly could be right now.
I was just going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, these last few games looked like the Raptors were tanking.
But they weren't alone. It was like all these teams were just like sitting their best players, and just like stars. Like, they were sitting like just starters, weren't playing for rest.
Detroit was tanking. Orlando was tanking.
Yeah.
You know, Houston was tanking by osmosis because of who they moved on from. And you lose 20 games in a row or whatever it is. That's pretty much tanking. Oklahoma City was tanking. Like, yeah.
They sent Al Horford home like 2 months ago.
Absolutely. Just for the purpose of tanking.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Like, Kyle Lowry, the fact that Lowry just rested.
Yes.
Like, just, I'm not playing anymore. No rhyme or reason.
Not even an injury.
I just decided not to play.
Yes.
Is as blatantly tanking as you could possibly get. So, tanking is still totally prevalent in the NBA. And you're not wrong, Jonas, in terms of the context of the season. At that point, when they went into Milwaukee, they beat them twice in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
right. And then they came home and beat Philly.
And then
at that point,
they were
above 500, and they were like fifth in the East.
Yeah.
So, yes, at that point, what I'm saying is big picture, completely hindsight is 2020. If in the end you did tank and in the end you did drop out, you might as well, you know, you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. Go all in and just lose every single possible game. But that's not a guarantee for you to win the lottery either. I mean, there's no guarantees you hold on to a top three pick. Nick Nurse will join us, though. Nick Nurse coming up just after 5. So we'll get into the whole Tampa experience with him, what it was like, the difficulties of it all, how you properly evaluate the team you have, the Kyle Lowry story, the scene and the situation down the stretch. So Nick's coming up. Ray will join us, Ray Ferraro, just after 6 o'clock. The Stanley Cup playoffs, I would say, are off to a pretty good start.
Yeah.
Those were 3 straight overtime games to start it. And the one that didn't go to overtime was the best game of the weekend, that Tampa-Florida game last night. That was just incredible.
Fantastic.
And it was intense. It was physical. It's everything you're looking for. All I could think of was the New York Rangers must have been in a fetal position watching that. Can't have it. Too intense, too physical, too mean. Just a bunch of guys acting too mean. And I have to believe James Dolan was thinking George Parra should pay for that because those two teams were being too mean to each other.
What was their wording again? The one
horrifying acts of violence.
There it is. There it was. I mean, it was a – I thought – I mean, Sam Bennett crossed the line and he got clipped for a game. I thought that was an awful hit. I personally did. As you guys know, as much as I love tough hockey and all of that, I hate hitting from behind more than anything. Like, because of what – we don't need to be right on this. You don't need to see somebody not get up from something. You know, that's the scariest thing for me. I know all the focus is on headshots and everything else. I'm not going to argue which one's more or less important. That one, I've always been scared of hits from behind. And we see guys do it way more because of the speed of the game, timing of their hits. But I don't know where, and I've said this before, and I don't want to sound like a dinosaur, I don't know where it became that guys turn their back on the play. Like I know I'm not saying that situation, but too many times we see a guy go into the corner and at the last second turn their back, and then they'd get crunched, and you're like, oh, what a terrible hit. Yeah, but I hated that hit. But
I didn't like the McDonough hit either. I mean,
you're right.
They're both bad hits.
But that one, he wasn't running in, charging. Like,
you're
Bennett
right.
was, clear from a mile away that he was going to hit him.
Yeah,
What did they call? Did they call it charging on that? I think it was charging.
It was a charging, so he got to charge. But, I mean, I think if the refs had a do-over, that's a major. Like, that was – it was – and you can't argue, playoffs, non-playoffs. Like, if you're going to call the rules, I thought that was a major. But, obviously, the league thought it was bad enough to clip him a game. And, you know, it's unfortunate. But Coleman got up, which is the good thing.
He got up. Duclair got up on the McDonough hit, although he was a little bit off. But it was a wild game. And I really feel like a massively missed opportunity for Florida, though. You had him on the ropes. You take a 4-3 lead, and then it's the Braden Point show again, and Kucherov and Point, and they're such good players. They're such a good team. It was such an intense game, and there's a lot that you can take out of it, I think, that you're going to apply to the series up here, where I was watching that thinking two things from a Maple Leaf standpoint. What Point and Kucherov did last night, and even what Huberto did last night. Huberto was equally as, amazing in terms of the third.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He got away with one on the breakaway a little bit, but that pass to Tippett and the play against on the Tippett goal was truly exceptional.
Yeah.
But that is what has to happen with your best players. Like Point and Kucherov, Braden Point in the third said, we're winning this game. That has to happen. Matthews has got to do it. Marner's got to do it. Right, that's who you rely on. Last year was the Kucherov Point show the whole way, and they win a Stanley Cup. It's got to happen with the big boys here. They're capable of doing it, but that's got to click. And I also think the physicality of it all and the intensity of it all, we've been talking about what Montreal, I think, is going to try to do. I think they're going to try to play like that. They're going to try to scrum. I think they should. They have to. I think it's incumbent on the Leafs to be proactive and do it first. Be aggressive first. Throw your body around. Pick a scrum. In the playoffs, we know it. It's always coincidental minors all the time. Don't get punched in the head and look at the ref and whine. Punch them back, and you can both take two. Because over time, they're going to win that battle. If they keep hitting you, keep punching you, keep scrumming you, you're going to get frustrated or you're going to feel like you're out of it, out of sync. I think it's incumbent on the Leafs to go throw your body first. Throw a punch first. Don't let the Habs drag you into it.
You're bang on. The difference is who does it. Like, that's the difference. Like, because Wayne Simmons is going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Austin Matthews, you need to fight or whatever. Just be physical. Use your body. Use your size. Like, Mitch Marner, be a pain in the ass to play against because he can be too. Like, that's the difference that you're pointing to, because when I look across the board on any team, and I'm not just cherry-picking anything, the star players have to be the star players, but they're going to have to fight through adversity. So, to your point, Brian, Austin Matthews may get a punch in the yap at some point, but give a cross check back.
Yep.
Give something, buy some space for yourself, because we can see you can shape all you want and have as much team toughness around the core. The core still has to bite too. Because they're the ones who are going to play 20-plus minutes a night.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are going to be in critical situations. It's not, again, I come back to it, it's not about fighting. It's about playing playoff hockey, and there is going to be adversity. Find a way to fight through it. Because we've seen last year, Kucherov and them fought through it. The year before against Columbus, guess what happened? Columbus got in their kitchen. Kucherov got suspended. I don't even think he scored a goal in the series. And they got completely off their game because Columbus ran them out of the building physically, and then they scored. Whereas I think they learned a lesson last year is you've got to fight through some of these nights where, hey, somebody
Absolutely.
Is going to give you a tap on the laces. Somebody is going to give you a stinky glove. That's playoff hockey. Live with it and move forward.
But to your point, Hayes, like, these are not the same players. Like, Matthews and Marner, they're totally different players than they were in August. They're totally different players than they were whatever that series was in 2019 against Boston. Like, they are just different. They're older. They're more experienced. Like, even last year when Matthews and Marner were going, they weren't this. Like, they've taken another leap. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what that looks like in the playoffs. And even to a lesser degree with Nylander. Like, Nylander had a really good second half. He just feels, like, older to me. He feels more... Like, you don't worry so much about the consistency with him and effort, although you did in the first half. But, like, in the second half, it was there. I don't know. Like, I just think this is a different team than we've seen in the past. And obviously some of the guys you're talking about, Simmons, like Foligno is a pretty tough guy. Bogosian, like, they've changed the identity of the team. It's like a habit to look back to last year, but this is a completely different team for the most part to last
year.
Yes,
I'm not arguing against that. I guess what I'm saying is the playoffs, we get amnesia every single year. We forget. Like, every year we forget. We look at the playoffs, we're like, wow, that was intense. How many hits did they have? How many punches to the head? How many scrums? So, yeah. And we haven't seen that at any point through 56 games. So this is going to be another hurdle. It's another challenge. Now, I don't know what the Habs are going to bring. We'll find out. You know, we'll see what happens based on their injuries, where their level of play is. And I don't think it's fair to compare Tampa, Florida, maybe to any other series, because those teams are, you know, they're really good. They had great seasons.
And they had a crowd.
And they had
the crowd
makes
that was a huge difference.
That was unbelievable.
Unbelievable, the crowd. Like, it's the amount of jealousy I have and envy for people being in the building for a game like that. Even in Vegas, it was a packed house. Not packed house, but it's getting there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can feel it. Down in the States, by the beginning of the second round, certainly third round, it'll be a packed building. Like, packed right. house. And then up here, there's just going to be nobody.
Just
and
me.
It's going to, yeah, except for you and the media, which yeah. is it's Barry going
Gibb.
To feel very different and look very different. But, you know, the intensity is what I'm saying, Jonas. Like, they've got to prove, keep proving that they can drive that and they can fight through it because it's coming.
Well, do you think that carried over? Like, obviously, Florida and Tampa saw each other a bunch in the regular season more than they would have normally. Do you think that is why it just started right away in game one? Like, usually in playoff series, it takes like a game and a half before that stuff starts, and it was like right away.
Well, they had a bloodbath a week ago.
Right.
Where there
were
suspensions. Like, that was basically setting the table. That was Florida saying, you're not coming into our house, we're going to go into your house and beat you. And Tampa's like, go ahead. You know, we don't care who wins the games, we'll see you in the playoffs. But they didn't back down. I want to get to this, and I know we'll get to this later. It was unbelievable hockey. Score was 5-4, and the goalie still played great. That's the one question mark.
I don't trust Bobrovsky at all.
Well, no. I'm talking about what we just talked with the Leafs. The Leafs, can they raise their level? Can they do that? You know what? That's the one thing. Can Jack Campbell, I would argue, does he have the most pressure out of anybody, any goal, especially any goalie up north, for sure, but any goaltender with expectation. Grubauer probably be another guy, but at least, you know, Grubauer has started games in the playoffs and he's been injured and stuff, but like Campbell is a real X factor for me.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Bruce Boudreau will join us. We'll ask him about that and him to evaluate this upcoming series. We'll continue to look back on the series over the course of the weekend. We've got three more games in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. We've got an all-time play-in game in the NBA where this is just exactly what they wanted. It'll be on ESPN down in the States on Wednesday night. Lakers, Warriors, we'll touch on that. PGA Championship this weekend down at Kiawa. There's a lot going on. Jonas is in here with Jamie Noodles McLennan. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Great tune, man. This is going to be awesome. Bee Gees all day. I'm ecstatic.
I don't think I can handle all this disco.
I can. Every once in a while, Jonas, just let yourself go a little bit.
How do you not know? Like, aren't you 40 yet, Jonas? How old are you?
I'm not.
Are you younger than Hayes?
I don't know how old Hayes is.
Yeah, he's mid-30s. He's younger than I am.
Wow.
Well, I mean, but that wouldn't, even if I was 40, I wouldn't be listening to the Bee Gees.
Would I?
No, I don't think you would. But my point is you'd probably be much more familiar with it.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe 40 and up, people have like, yeah, I kind of grew up with this, or my parents always had it on, you know, on Sundays or something. I don't envision, like, Darlene and Stu McLennan moving around the living room to it or anything. But
I could picture that. Why not? Just set the tone on a Sunday night. I love it.
Just on the dance floor, just going to work.
But this is the epitome of just shredding the dance floor type of music.
Yeah, exactly. And they have some great songs. Like, it's just it maybe skips a generation. I always feel like some of the great artists can go back and I don't know what the right wording is. Not steal the track, but like revamp it. Didn't Puff Daddy do like Every Breath You Take? He yes. took some songs, yes. right? Yes. From the Police. Like
we
he
don't
stole
call him
the track.
He's called
Puff Daddy
Diddy
anymore.
Now. Yeah. Actually, I think he's just Diddy now. I think he scrapped P a while ago.
All right. Diddy? Well, you know what I mean. P Diddy. I can't. He's a great artist. Put it that way. Good. We'll just call him Puff Daddy, though.
Yeah, I think that still counts.
I remember him as Puff Daddy.
Yeah, I think if you call him that, I don't think it's, like, offensive or anything like that.
I met him one night, New York City.
Yeah.
Awesome guy. Very nice man. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Well, he'd run New York. Like, he's the man, I would think, in New York.
Is there any more to that story?
Not that I can share on it.
Okay.
Not online.
He was very, very cool guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's absolutely. I mean, hip-hop does that all the time. They take samples of old songs like Motown and disco, 70s, 80s, whatever it might be.
Exactly.
I'll bet you Bruce Boudreaux, he's cut some rug to the Bee Gees. I guarantee it.
He knows the Bee Gees. I guarantee you. They played it in the dressing room. I guarantee
Back in the day, you think? Or
yeah,
like
for sure.
Currently?
When he was in junior. When he was in junior, there were Bee Gees in the dressing room.
Okay, here he is. Longtime NHL head coach, former player. One of our favorites here is Bruce Boudreaux. What is your appreciation of the Bee Gees like, Bruce?
Well, I got a Bee Gees album at home, but I was more into the Archies than the Bee Gees. You know, Andy Kim, you know, like if it was that kind of, you know, stuff that I could sing along with.
But, I see.
You know, and I could never dance. So, I mean, the Bee Gees were out sort of in the middle 70s when they came out and were hot.
Yeah, I guess if you're not into dancing or you just have no interest in that, the Bee Gees probably would not be in the wheelhouse, I guess. But still, sneaky good band. We're playing it all day because Jonas is in here, and he looks like Barry Gibb. He's got the long hair. He hasn't been able to cut his hair in months. And so that's the reasoning for bringing it up.
They had a tremendous amount of hits. And when John Travolta did the movie, and, you know, I mean, and the Bee Gees wrote the soundtrack and did the soundtrack, that was – like the biggest record of the year, and everybody was playing it.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
We love it. We're all over it. We'll continue to be all over it throughout the afternoon. How are you feeling about the Maple Leafs? I mean, they're incredibly healthy. We saw it today. Zach Bogosian has been cleared. It doesn't mean he'll be playing as of game one. But across the board, like, their whole lineup is available. If you're Sheldon Keefe, how beneficial is that for a head coach to be able to look at your board and say every single possible player is available?
Well, now it's decision time. Now you got usually when you got guys injured, you don't have to make decisions; just people go in. Now it's decision time, and sometimes it's they're easy decisions, and sometimes they're difficult ones. But it's better to be healthy than not healthy. I'll say that. But you can't really make too many mistakes in the Leafs lineup right now. Whoever you put out there, the only one I would worry about. Is it Riley Nash? Yeah, like, I mean, because he hasn't played. And, I mean, he's not a Kucherov that can come out and do what Kucherov did, but if he hasn't played with his teammates, I still believe he's been practicing for a couple weeks and should be okay, but that would be the only question mark that I would have.
Bruce, you know, through your experience, the one thing I've been talking about here heading into the playoffs is a big X factor is in net. And you got Jack Campbell, who's been fantastic this season, Frederik Andersen coming back off the injury, you know, playing a game and a half in the minors and then playing one game at the NHL level before, you know, the playoffs here to settle back into his game. You know, when you look at having two goaltenders that can play, Have you had a scenario maybe in the playoffs or heading into the playoffs where, I wouldn't say it's a question mark because Campbell's your starter, but you have maybe a guy that you could go to if things falter. How would you let that play out, or how do you at least approach it? Is it literally, you know, an old saying like game by game, or do you kind of have something in the back of your mind of how you want it to unfold as the playoffs progress?
Well, you certainly game by game, because, I mean, if you start thinking three games ahead and Jack Campbell plays great, you're not going to pull him. So, I mean, that plan was down the window. But I've had a scenario exactly like that, and Freddie Anderson was involved with it. And Anaheim is, we had John Gibson and Freddie Anderson, and we started John Gibson the first two games against Nashville the one year, and he lost both of them. And so I just switched right away to Anderson, and he promptly won the next three games. And the first game he came in, he won 3-0, and then he won 3-1. I mean, he was outstanding coming in relief. I had the same thing happen in Washington when I had Theodore and Varlamov, and Theodore lost the first two games. So we put Varlamov in, who was a rookie too, and he won the next four games in the series. So, it's outstanding, or it's easy when you have two goalies and one isn't getting the job done. You don't feel, anything other than what goalie can go in tonight and win you the game. And when you have two good goalies, it's an easy decision sometimes. I mean, the biggest question to me with Jack is he's never been in a playoff game. He's going to look down the ice, and there's Carey Price, the pressure of Montreal, Toronto. If he handles it, wonderful. If he doesn't handle it, then you've always got somebody to be able to go in and take over for him and not really worry about it. Is this a gamble or not a gamble? I got to believe Sheldon feels pretty comfortable with if Anderson goes in.
Well, so, Bruce, are those must be difficult decisions. Like, John Gibson was, at that point, like the future of the Ducks, and obviously Jack Campbell's had this great run. Like, if you're in Sheldon Keith's position, how do you manage that, like the delicate nature of a decision like that, if you get to that point?
Well, I would think, and I mean, I'm not Sheldon for sure, but I mean, it's an easy decision. And you look at Jack Campbell's record and you say, Freddie, he's played so good. You know, I mean, he's going to start. But don't worry, if there's a bobble, you be ready, because I have all the faith in the world in you going in. So, I mean, if something bad happens, be ready to go in. And Freddie's already faced that kind of situation, because him and Gibson were neck and neck as to who should play, who should start in the playoffs, and the decision was to go with Gibson. But I came right up to Freddie and said, if something goes wrong, you be ready to jump in, and he did. He was great for me.
We're chatting with Bruce Boudreaux. The intensity of the playoff games over the course of the weekend didn't surprise anybody, but there's always been somewhat of a school of thought. If you're a favorite in the series, if you have a lot more talent and you're expected to win it, that maybe the messaging from the coach should be, don't get dragged into the silly stuff, you know, take your lumps and, you know, play in between the whistles, don't play after the whistle, et cetera, et cetera. How does that logic apply in the playoffs, and specifically with the Leafs and Habs, where I have to believe, Bruce, Montreal's probably looking at this thinking, we can't keep up with them in terms of skill and talent, but if we can drag them into a bit of a war here, it could be beneficial. So what would the messaging be from you to the Leafs? Would you suggest they be proactive and be as aggressive? Should they try to avoid it? How does this play out come playoff time on Thursday night?
Well, I'd certainly want to be aggressive against the Leafs, because if you let them skate, you're going to lose. And, I mean, be aggressive, but playing within the whistles. The last thing you want is a stupid penalty. And even though the Toronto power play has been fairly dismal, I mean, you don't want to keep putting them on the power play. But you would want an aggressive game. And because usually it works out where the referees, especially in the playoffs, make it pretty equal. If you're going to get five penalties, then the other team's going to get four or five. And if that's where you think you can win the game on special teams, then I would go that way. Just like when I do Washington games all the time, back in their home games is they when they play just a skating game and they don't hit and they're not physical, they don't succeed. So, I mean, they got to play that way. And when you used to play the Flyers wanted to get into penalty-filled games because they felt comfortable in those games. I don't think the Leafs would feel comfortable in that kind of a game. So you got to make things uncomfortable for them because, obviously, if you let them do what they've done all year, they're going to beat you. So you got to try something without taking penalties, make it uncomfortable for the Leafs.
Bruce, I wanted to talk about your communication with your individual players heading into the playoffs. You obviously have your star guys, the guys you're going to rely on. Do you have one-on-one meetings? Like, what is your protocol heading into the playoffs? Like, right now, we're sitting around, and I know the Leafs and the Habs are certainly, and we'll put the Oilers and the Jets in this position. They're watching the playoffs for 4 or 5 days before they get going. So if you had that luxury, we'll call it a luxury, even though I wouldn't call it that, but would you be having meetings one-on-one and going through expectation systems, or do you let the guys kind of just let it breathe and let them amp things up on their own?
Well, with 25 years of coaching, I've done it both ways. And sometimes you over-prepare. You know, you prepare, you go over every player on the other team individually, and sometimes that's just too much for the players to handle, and they just want to play. And keeping it as simple as you can for some teams is the best way to go. But I know if you're a coach, you don't want to leave any stone unturned. So we usually have a playoff book and go over their record against each other, the rosters, and it's more like you read it, and we're not going to go over the whole 40-page book on each round for you because players' head will be spinning. I mean, half the players are European. They don't understand a word of it anyway. They just want to play the game. But you definitely see a lot of video on tendencies on the other team, and you're not going to have any surprises. I mean, I was saying on air last night, the biggest surprise for Florida is going to be the Tampa power play because, I mean, they haven't seen that power play this year. You have to go back 2 years to see the footage of that power play, but it's going to be great, and it's going to surprise them. Fortunately, I got something right for a change, and Tampa had 3 power play goals. But, I mean, they looked dynamic on the power play with Kucherov and Stamkos. So, I mean, it was, you know, you're not going to get – when you play a team 10 times, there's not going to be too many surprises that you can add in. I mean, if the Leafs don't know the Canadiens and the Canadiens don't know the Leafs, then, I mean, boy, there's something wrong already before you start.
Absolutely. It felt like a missed opportunity for Florida because they're on home ice. They're up against the defending champions. They don't have the playoff success, and they had them on the ropes last night. How do you see that, knowing the outcome that Tampa came back one game one? How do you think the rest of the series might play out?
Well, I mean, Florida was close. I don't know if Florida might switch goalies. I mean, with Weegar ready to play. But that being said, I think Tampa's only going to get better. I mean, this was an opportunity lost for Florida. They came out with so much energy. They had a 2-1 lead after the first period, after I think dominating, but the lead wasn't big enough. They needed a 2-0, 3-0 lead and keep going at them, and they let Tampa back in the game, and you know, Braden Point is incredible in the playoffs. He seems to come up with the big goal all the time. You add their other guys. If Hedman can stay healthy, I do believe that Tampa will win the series. But Florida, they've got Joel behind the bench who's going to make them believe that they can win, and they'll be very hard to beat in the next game.
Well, it's every night from here on out. We got 3 more tonight, and the Canadian playoffs begin on Wednesday night. It's going to be a fun ride. I'm sure we'll catch up again real soon. Thank you for doing this, Bruce. We always appreciate it.
I just hope I get, you know, I can't wait for Vancouver and Calgary to play. That's the best game for me.
That was a great game last night. That was the one that stood out for me.
If I'm watching those guys now, and I'm sitting in the locker room, and I'm going, okay, in 3 months they won't know my numbers, but if I can add 6 goals in the next 3 games, it'll look like I had a really good year.
That's a good point. That's a very good
point. I expect all high-scoring games. It's all offense all the time with those guys now.
Well, we got 2 more, so bask in it. Enjoy it. Day games. Can't wait for it. Thank you, Bruce.
All right, you guys have a good day.
You too. There's Bruce Boudreau. Yeah, what
it's a 5-1
contrast, man. But watching the playoffs with fans and stuff and then a scrimmage with no fans last night, that was weird.
It was weird. You come out of that game, that Tampa Florida game, and you're just like, you're coming out of your skin. You're just pumped up, and then you see, you know, Calgary Vancouver start. They had a, you know, decent start. The pace was good, but it just, what a night and day. And then I don't know if you actually stayed up to watch
it.
Like, it was 5-1. It was 5-1, and then Vancouver came back to send it into overtime. Like, you imagine, like, you're trying to get through, and then Vancouver wakes up and scores some power play goals. You're like, what the hell is going on here? And then Lindholm scores in overtime. There was zero reaction. It was like, let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah,
like,
what are we doing?
We just wasted time here. It was,
yeah, mad
it
at
was
each
a,
other. You know who's probably watching that game closer than anyone else is Seattle. Like, they're the only ones that would be watching that, being like, all right, we got 3 more games to study. Who might be available? Who we can take?
Sure.
You know, beyond that, who cares? I mean, I will not watch a second of those games. I mean, there's too much other good stuff on. There's too much going on. The weather's beautiful, you know. You got to get outside, although I wasn't outside at 10:30 at night last night.
No, but I know what you mean. It just, I think
I'm not
you were all,
games.
Plus, you know what, there was such good hockey yesterday. Like, by the time that third game came around with Tampa and Florida, that was the fourth game that I was watching, and I was a little bit done.
I don't want
to
spoil the sport. Right, exactly. You don't want to leave, like, a bad taste in your mouth. You're like, it was such a good day of hockey. I don't need to watch these two teams wrap up the season in the most kind of random possible fashion, where regular season games are still ongoing. Ray Ferraro will join us at 6 o'clock. Nick Nurse coming up in about 20 minutes, 15 minutes from now. Nick Nurse will join us, the head coach of the Raptors. Look back on the season with him. And the Jays are off tonight. They take 2 of 3 over the weekend. Their next 10 games are against the AL East and the big boys in the AL East, Tampa, Boston, New York. You know, these 4 teams in the AL East, they're all chugging, man. They're all above 500, and they all look good. We'll get to that more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Yeah, this might be the number one go-to track for the Bee Gees. This one resonates, man. This one.
Really?
Yeah, it's more of a slow song. You know,
when would you ever listen to this?
The Bee Gees? This is a great track.
No,
more
like this
woman?
Specific
this song.
Like, tell me, like, you're out on the barbecue, you turn this on. Like, when would you ever listen to this?
Well, I don't personally have it downloaded or purchased, but I have, when I hear it occasionally,
like,
I leave
hey.
It on. I leave it on. I'm not flipping around.
I was going to say I'm sick of all the Bee Gees, but I kind of like it.
Yeah, thank you. There you go.
I'm telling you, back in the day, on a Friday or Saturday night, you have the boys over to the house. You got the barbecue. There's a bottle of vodka and a bottle of whiskey sitting on the counter. And Staying Alive starts up, and the boys just go to town. Like, that's where you're like, okay, this is the pre-party. And then you go... You go out afterwards, but you've got, like, a vibe in you already.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the way I used to.
No, you're 100% right. The cabs are getting called right as the song comes to an end because you're so fired up. You're like, it's time to hit the bars and let's
go.
Like, let's go send a vibe out to the whole city courtesy of the Bee Gees.
Not like Zeppelin or something.
No. They have nothing on the Bee Gees. Nothing.
No, I mean, they all are amazing bands, but I just feel like there are songs where you're like, okay, we're having a night. And then there are other songs where it's like we're staying in and we're going to just have some beers and watch the game or whatever. But if you're having like a party night, you know, 6 of you are going out or whatever, like I could see on the Rolodex for the night the Bee Gees Staying Alive. Like
absolutely.
You know, there's Night Train maybe from Guns N' Roses. There's a few,
Night Train.
Yeah.
They seem to play Teenage Wasteland at the Leafs practice a lot.
Do they?
They still play that a lot?
A lot.
Yeah.
Really?
It's a bit
too much.
What's it like having access to something like that where even without COVID, it's not like they let just random people into the rink. Like, I think you need media access to get in there. But that's going to be a great book or potential for a book. It's certainly a story that I guess I'm pitching to you, Jonas, that you should write.
What is it?
Well, the year that you got to see the games that no one else got to see live. Like, if you're in the building to watch any of these games, even if you're a mile away, and I know where you are, you're up in the gondola, you're still in there. No one else is in there. Like, it's pretty incredible. You're going to be watching, like, playoff games, and there's going to be, like, 50 people in the building. Non-players, non-coaches, non-staff, right?
Yes. It's not weird? It's not as great as you think it would
be. Well, I'm not suggesting it's great. I'm just saying it's unique.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people that would love that access. Like, I'd love to be – I would go to the game. I'd be in the building. 100% I would if they'd let me in, but they won't. So.
No, but it's weird the sounds in it. Jonas, you and I could get into it. Like, all you hear is sticks clacking.
Well, like, and then they put the fake noise in at these weird times, and it's just like, what is happening? I'm in, like dystopia.
The puck will hit a guy's skate in the corner, and the crowd will go, oh! You're like, where'd that come from? But that's just the person pressing the button somewhere.
That's a tough gig. Yeah, that's a tough one. You got to be on top of it. Yeah. Hour two coming up. Nick Nurse will join us in about 10 minutes to start off the hour. We'll get back into the Jays' successful weekend. They're off tonight. Raptors wrapping up the season. They're out of Tampa, hopefully for good. And the Leafs are waiting to get going come Thursday. We'll touch on that more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.